master plan, because ain't nothing but sweat inside my hand. So I dig into my pocket, all my money is spent. So I dig deeper, but still coming up with lint. So I start my mission, leave my residence, thinking how could I get some dead presidents? I need money. I used to be a stick-up kid, so I think of all the devious things I did. I used to roll up. This a hold up. Ain't nothing funny. Stop smiling. Be still. Don't nothing move but the money. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. This is your first time stopping by. We thank you and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I am, of course, John Franklin. I'll be joined shortly, or I'm joined presently, as always, by Craig Allen, the co-founder and main man at Fight Night Picks. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm well. I mean, the world's kind of going a little crazy, and things in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada aren't too bad. So things are going well.
That's good. All right, Craig, on this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk about Conor McGregor's GOAT status, John Jones, Henry Cejudo, and Jorge Masvidal's roster status. And we start the conversation with, should fighters have different contracts at different weights? All coming up soon, but we begin, of course, with George Floyd. In a manner of speaking, let me first say, and I only speak for myself here, my heart goes out to the family of George Floyd and all the people who have been directly or indirectly affected by his murder. The wake of his murder has certainly been felt in the mixed martial arts community, as several fighters have taken to social media to not only discuss Mr. Floyd's murder, but some of their own experiences. The three biggest fighters in the game have also been vocal. Middleweight champion Israel Adesanya spoke at a Black Lives Matter rally in New Zealand. John Jones took to the streets of Albuquerque to confront looters, and Conor McGregor spoke out on social media. For its part, the UFC showed a graphic of George Floyd, I believe, but I don't think I've seen a public statement yet. I could have missed it. Craig, we know where the UFC, and in particular Dana White, stand on Donald Trump. They stand with him. But as we have seen recently with some players in the NFL creating a video demanding the NFL support in the Black Lives Matter movement, the other sports can't be far behind. Craig, I'm going to give you a job you didn't ask for, but you got it.
Uh-oh.
You're the PR department for the UFC. What's the play here?
I'm going to start from the start. While this was still fresh in everybody's minds on Sunday, and I'm not trying to pump my tires, I'm just laying out the facts. This was the second question I get asked on a national Canadian radio station. Again, if this is your first time checking out Fight Night Picks, A, appreciate it, but B, I'm Canadian, John's American. The world's a lot different between our two countries. But I want to say Canada, for its own part, has its own problems. So if you're a Canadian and you want to turn a blind eye to all of this and say, oh, it doesn't happen in our country, we have some fish to fry as well, and we definitely have our own issues. So I'll preface it that way. But the question was, did they do enough by just showing that graphic? And in the moment, I felt like it was a good idea to honor George Floyd's memory and to put it out there. Honestly, it took me by surprise because of what Dana White, the president of the UFC, has done, the support he's shown for the president of the United States. I was kind of not taken aback, but I was surprised that they did that in the first place. To answer the question, if you're the PR department, what's the play here? I think you should kind of make a continuation of it. I really think you should try and put yourself on the forefront. You're already the promotions kind of doing the wild things. You're taking a potential trademark thrown out there by a comedy show on HBO and then actually trademarking that name. So you're playing, you know, catch up in certain portions, but in others you're trying to be a leader where you're the first sport back. You're doing this normally. So if you're that one that's out there in the forefront, that's actually on big ESPN showing fights and whatnot, I think you should shed a little bit more of a light on this, because the UFC is such a unique type of, MMA is such a unique type of sport. John, you and I have talked about this before. And right now, my position in this whole situation, because of where I'm from, where I grew up, the way I grew up, I just have to listen. And I know a lot of people have said that, and it's a little bit of a cop-out of an answer, but I don't have any of the answers. And what I've done here over the past 2 weeks is reflect on decisions I've made, things that I've seen on social media. I've seen things said that make me absolutely sick to my stomach. And I've seen things that I never wanted to see before. Yes, they're uncomfortable for some, you know, measure or another. They're learning experiences for a lot of people. But the thing that hit home the most was seeing colleagues and people that I know quite well post on social media about instances in their lives where they were faced with incredibly uncomfortable situations that I've never been faced with before. And being persons of color, and obviously I'm not, but some of the things that they put out there just made me second guess every decision I've ever made, made me second guess the times when I was a bystander. Maybe I could have said something, or maybe I could have done something. And I think there's a lot of people out there that need to take that time and reflect. And if the UFC takes a position of, hey, we should really try and highlight this and how we can move forward, because your biggest stars, Israel Adesanya's at a rally talking about it, but also John Jones, for better or for worse, and for all the negative things he's done, and he's done negative things in 2020, and I'm sure, you know, they'll get brought up again later on down the road, but he's out there on the front lines confronting vandals, looters, what have you, and actually doing some good for his community in that way. I think the UFC should really try and take a forward first type of approach, a proactive type of approach, and highlight these good deeds that have been done by their athletes, rather than just flash a picture up there and, hey, that's good enough.
So for me, I agree. I think there more needs to be done. I do understand the political nature of what Dana White has already put himself into and what comes with that. He spoke at the Republican National Convention. I do think, for me, this is an open and shut case because of what I believe in. I don't think this has anything to do with good cops or looters. I think those two groups are out of this altogether. I think it simply comes down to people of color and bad cops. So that's why it's an open and shut case for me. That's why I don't have to overthink it that much. And I think that that's the way that Dana White should approach it. And that's the way the UFC should approach it. He should say, we are in favor of police acting in the way that police should act. And we are against police brutality. You know, I have friends that are cops. I have, and I don't, you know, I have a person who used to be my teammate as a teacher. Her boyfriend or her fiance is a cop. And I, since this has happened, I've asked her, how is he doing? Because I know he's a good guy. I know this is kind of his thing. So I'm wondering how he's processing all this. I think if you're the UFC, you have to lean in. I think you have to, you don't want, from a strictly PR perspective, and listen, I don't want to narrow this down to just PR, because obviously there's lives at stake here and it's a bigger issue, but the biggest star in your, or the potential to be the biggest star in your company, was at a Black Lives Matter rally. You got to address, you cannot be at odds with this guy, right? You don't want to be Drew Brees. And here's the good news. If you are pro Black Lives Matter, which I am, here's the good news. One thing that I'm noticing a lot more is that the cancel culture that we all don't like, occasionally it does some good, right? Here's what it does some good, the Me Too movement, okay? This is starting to play out like the Me Too movement a little bit. You're seeing up on social media, people are getting identified. I saw a quote tweet from like the Attorney General of Maryland who said, who is this guy? Let me know who he is. The guy that was like pulling the kids off the bike and all that. Or running his bike into people and taking the black light. Like, we already knew who that guy is. It's been 12 hours or 24 hours since that happened. That's where the cancel culture does some good. But so I think that this may be different than in the past. So I think the UFC needs to be careful, or they're going to end up like Drew Brees.
The one other thing, and this is where I was kind of going with it too, was this is a conversation that we've had before in a different light way before these times. And it was on one of these shows, whether it was on this network or another. You and I talked about the fact that the UFC, MMA in general, is one of the most diverse sports that's out there. Think about it. One of your biggest stars at heavyweight is from Cameroon, speaks French, traveled to France, has a teammate, Cyril Gane, who's French. You have French-Canadians, now that I'm on the French topic. You have fighters from Mexico, like Yair Rodriguez. Amanda Nunes, who's fighting this weekend, is openly homosexual. And is a huge superstar and a double champion and one of the best fighters that you have on your roster. So if you carry that, and I'll just put it this way, bad mojo towards a sport on social media, this and that, you are not going to get far. You're not going to get far in life, but this is one of the most open and inclusive sports, even though you'd think, no, it isn't. It's barbaric. It's cage fighting. But it's actually a little bit more than that. And I know behind the banner of the UFC, behind you know, Donald Trump having the video before the first event back, kind of saying that, hey, we're back. A lot of people might take that in a negative light. And I understand it if maybe they don't cover the sport, they don't watch the sport. But the inner workings and everything that's going on, it's actually quite interesting. And things have actually moved in quite a positive direction.
I'll say this one more thing before we move on to the next topic. You know, sometimes in life, weird things happen and they change the dynamic of things or the paradigm shifts. The pandemic and the fact that we communicated on social media globally during the pandemic, and the pandemic affected all of us, everything that happened subsequently may affect us globally because the pandemic affects us globally. If you'll notice, George Floyd was murdered in Minnesota. There are protests in France. There are protests in South Africa. Like, there are protests around the world, despite where this happened. That, I think, is a byproduct of the pandemic and the globalization of it. So people are looking at it like, in the news cycle, we were all affected by this thing. Now we're all affected by that thing. And the reality of whether or not the entire world was affected by George Floyd, the entire world is taking notice. So you need to approach these things differently if you're someone asked to deal with this in crisis mode. Everyone knows who Drew Brees is today, across the world, for this, if they didn't know him before. All right.
It's very interesting, and we move on to another really big topic. And John, Conor McGregor has been busy with other things on social media as well. He started a propaganda campaign asserting himself as the greatest fighter of all time. This, of course, has caused everyone to chime in, from consensus GOAT John Jones to Dana White, and all have been taking an opposing view. He's even gotten Anderson Silva in on the act as the middleweight GOAT called out Conor for a catchweight fight. Now, John, I'm going to use your response to gauge how much the quarantine has really affected your mental capacity. Do you agree with the fact that Conor's a GOAT? Or should he have to fight Anderson Silva at that weird catch weight of 176 pounds?
He's not the GOAT, so I'll save the trouble. Spoiler alert, he's not the GOAT. Hot take, Conor's not the GOAT. You know, listen, I Anderson Silva's a weird guy in the sense that historically, you know, sometimes things happen and in a vacuum they look a certain way to us, and then we look at them from further away. It makes, you know, Joe Walsh of the Eagles said that sometimes when things are happening, it looks like just a bunch of random things bouncing around in your life. But then when you look back at it from a further distance, it looks like a fine symphony that was, you know, well orchestrated. So Anderson Silva, in retrospect, seems to be a guy that the UFC puts out there to be this guy on everyone's resume. Like, if you're going to have a Hall of Fame career, you have to at some point fight Anderson Silva. They wanted him to fight GSP because he's open to it. So I can understand why Anderson Silva's name. He's fought Cormier. He's fought – there's talk about him fighting Jones. He's fought Adesanya. He's fought Bisping. He's fought, you know, pretty much everybody. So would I like to see Conor McGregor fight Anderson Silva? Sure. Just to see the two of them in a cage. Do I think it's going to be a good fight? Maybe. Because Anderson has the physical advantages and Conor has the youth. It could be a good fight. I thought Adesanya and Silva was fun. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, Gotti Ward, but I enjoyed it. Yeah, I think that Conor's starting to do a little bit of propaganda to get himself kind of looked at in a different light. To what end, I don't know. Maybe to draw GSP out. That'd be smart. If I was Conor, this should be a big ploy to draw GSP out. But what are your thoughts?
I just want to see GSP fight Habib at 165 pounds. Make it happen. I want super lightweight to be a thing. Do I think Conor McGregor is the greatest of all time? No. Is John drinking out of a regular thermos and I'm drinking out of a baseball bat? Yes. Is that cool? Yes. Would Conor McGregor and Anderson Silva be cool? Yeah, it would be. Do I want to see it? Not necessarily. If it was a perfect world, and I'm sure we're going to get into this later, if it was a perfect world, I would like to see Jorge Masvidal fight Conor McGregor at 170 pounds. You've got the allure. Jorge Masvidal fought at Bellator 1. He was a lightweight. He fought in backyards. Now he's fighting Conor McGregor. It's just like when you had Cerrone fighting him, only it's a bigger name and a bigger fish right now. But would I like to see it at 176 pounds? Why not? I mean, it is a weird number, but they went on to explain why it's such a weird number. But it's one of those ones that's kind of weird. Conor threw out all of those names. But GSP seemed to be the sticking point where a lot of people considered St. Pierre to be the greatest of all time, which maybe shouldn't come as a huge surprise. There's a lot of people that really kind of you know, slag him in the comments as being a boring fighter, decision fighter, this and that. But all said at the end of the day, capping it, putting a cherry on top and finishing Michael Bisping, I think added to that legacy and not only made him relevant even today, but I think it really cemented that GOAT status as, hey, he was a double champ. He was a two-division champ.
I agree with everything you said, except for the fact that if George St. Pierre fights Khabib, the only thing that will bring him out is that 155-pound belt. So if he's got
65.
No, there's not going to be a belt. So if there's a 165-pound belt, yeah, he'll come out. But I think that he historically people would view that as a novelty that was created just for him, and it will
like
the BMF belt. Exactly. All right, Craig. John Jones has a wandering eye again, as Dominic Reyes and Jan Blachowicz wonder when it's going to be daytime. Jones is out cutting promos on Francis Ngannou. Side note, this came interestingly on the heels of Daniel Cormier saying Ngannou's name. Now, that began a couple weeks ago, but now the big news is that Jones is using the Ngannou fight to talk about his worth in this fight game. He has gone so far as to say, you know what, if you won't pay me, release me. Craig, Jones has definitely accomplished enough and made enough money to say thanks for the cheese, but talk to me about all the facets of this. Do you like the matchup with Ngannou? Should Dana back up the Brinks truck for it? And is this battle bigger than just John Jones for the UFC?
Yeah, it is bigger than John Jones because you've seen more and more fighters enter this realm of, hey, pay me or I'm gone. Jorge Masvidal, John Jones, a lot of big names kind of saying, hey, we're going to be done soon if you don't pay us. And it's awkward because they're independent contractors, but you can't just up and leave your contract and fight for another organization. So you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. You already negotiated for the contract that you have. So you fight it out and you earn the money that you get. You can use the little bit of leverage that you have on social media, which John Jones and Jorge Masvidal have attempted to do, or you call up your manager and try and get them involved as well, which if I'm not mistaken, a lot of managers out of this whole thing are the same managers that manage these fighters. If any of that makes much sense. I threw out a tweet there tonight and I kind of said, well, I didn't put Scott Coker's name in there, but is Viacom kind of licking their chops right now? Because you get that big CBS money coming in fairly soon for Bellator. Will they go out and try and sign a whole horde of fighters? Because you just lost Rory McDonald to the PFL, which cost you some money to bring him over or try to at least entice him from the UFC originally. You have deep pockets to sign guys. Plus, you have a European series. Plus, you have a lot of homegrown talent. So Bellator, to me, is a good destination for this. Now, do I want to see John Jones, Ryan Bader too? No, I don't. I just want to see if you're paying attention. No, I don't want to see that fight again. But it really makes things interesting. And if you really want to see what effect these conversations have on the UFC, I'm going to point two things out to you. You're going to have a very limited amount of international fighters, and I'll say just fighters. In May, you had a limited amount. In June, you're going to have a limited amount. Now, Fight Island, will it happen by the end of this month? Probably not. We're in June 2020 right now, if you're catching up and maybe you're in a time machine coming back and watching this. There's talk that Fight Island's going to be a thing. They'll bring in international fighters. Right now, the international fighters that are on the card are fighters that live and train in the States. Look at the name value on the June 13th card that the UFC is going to put out. I threw it out there in a poll. How would you rate it? And I went, is it a 1-3? Is it a 4-6? 7-9? Or 10? And I'd say at least a third of voters pick 1-3. The name value is not there because now they're grasping at straws to try and get fighters. But hey, at least there's a product on ESPN. So it's a really long-winded answer, but that starts to water down your brand. And I mean, they can afford to do it because they're the only game in town and they don't have to pay their stars, but I really think they should. You can't draw from the boxing model right now because Endeavor has to make some money because everything else is losing money. But I really feel like they should kind of pay their stars their due. Boxers get paid so much more money, but that's a different dynamic.
Well, listen, John Jones is one of these weird people who is an amazing fighter, probably the best of all time, but isn't a draw. And he's not a bad draw, but he needs the right dance partner. A guy like Conor McGregor could, you know, fight a heavy bag and people pay to watch it. So that's where they're different. And I think that if Jones, you know, at the end of the day, that's always going to be what Dana comes back to is, hey, I think at some point these fighters would be wise to negotiate a higher percentage of the revenue. But then what does that mean? Does that mean Jones and guys like Masvidal still get paid the same and the floor raises? Or does that mean, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats? What does that mean? So
perfect example.
This is the first Craig Allen interruption of the podcast. Go ahead.
Perfect example. This is going to be a really weird segue.
Okay.
Modern Family season 4. Ed O'Neill got paid $200,000 an episode, but everybody else got paid a portion of it. So what did they do? They pretty well went on strike when they went to do the table read before the season. And then what was the network forced to do? Lower Ed O'Neill's salary, raise everybody else's salary. So they were basically on par at like $150 an episode for the adults. And all the kids got paid. Their scale went way up season by season. And everybody kind of earned their keep because the organization, in this case, the TV show and the network, were rolling in money. It was one of the most popular shows on TV at the time when it was at its peak. So they paid everybody so they didn't leave. Now, again, the independent contractor, dependent contractor, it's a little bit different with the UFC, but you know how much money they're making. It's a publicly traded company. Anybody can figure out this information. So your fighters can get that info, pay them.
Well, but now here's the other example, which would be Friends. Friends all banded together and they got paid huge amounts of money. They said, we all get paid the same thing across the board. We're a truly ensemble cast. We all deserve the money. Now, you could do that in the UFC. You're not going to get everybody on board, but here's what you could do. You could do champions. All the champions could band together and say that as a champion, I am going to – hold on. As a champion, I deserve to get paid $1 million a fight, right? Now, at minimum. My minimum as a champion is $1 million a fight. Would that raise all boats potentially? I have a little bit of a thing that I want to do for Fight Night Picks that is going to be its own thing, and just a video. I will give you guys a preview of it.
Here's
here,
a tease.
Which it is a tease, which is to say that some of these guys, these fighters that really have true negotiating power, guys like Conor McGregor, guys like Jon Jones, they need to write out their contracts and they need to fulfill them. They need to take a walk. And here's the tease. If fighters in other organizations put something in their contract called a Conor clause, things would get real interesting. So, and we'll move on from there. But yeah, I think they should pay Jon Jones. But at the same time, Dana is opening up a door to say, if I pay Jon Jones, who's a great fighter, what do I pay an equally great fighter who draws more? Now we have an issue. Like, what do I pay? If I'm paying Jon Jones $5 million a fight or $10 million a fight, what am I paying Israel Adesanya? Because he's every bit the fighter Jon Jones is at present. And then we're going to get into the whole speculative part of it where it's like, okay, Jon Jones is at the tail end of his career, no matter how great he is. So are you paying him for a body of work? Or are you paying him for what his value is moving forward? Because a guy like Adesanya, a guy like Conor, a guy like Usman, they have more value moving forward. So what are you paying based on? So it gets real interesting.
John, the MMA world got a little less cringy this week as it became more apparent that we're really losing Triple C Henry Cejudo to retirement. Now, Cejudo was stripped of his belt. The title fight got booked. Cejudo showed up at pro wrestling show, cutting promos. I mean, what do you make of this here? And do you think it's for real?
I'm of two minds on this one, and I'm really conflicted about this one. And typically, I kind of know, I have a good sense of what I think here, meaning, oh, this guy's retiring, and he has every intention of coming back. Listen, GSP retired early and only fought once since he retired, so I was wrong about that one. Here's where Henry Cejudo gets interesting. If you view Henry Cejudo as a combat athlete who is truly a wrestler at his heart, his intention would have been to wrestle in high school, wrestle in college, go to the Olympics, and then figure something else out to do with his life, right? So you either have to look at his MMA career as house money, and he didn't know he was going to be this great. He tried it out. He ended up being amazing, and it's all a bonus, and he's still content to walk away whenever. Or you have to look at it as another career that he's very good at, and he's leaving a lot of money on the table to walk away, which is what I think the case is. I do think he's using this as a negotiating ploy, but I do think that he also has enough of a mindset of a wrestler that if he had to stay away and really dig in on the negotiation part of it, he could. And I think that he's doing what GSP did when he got injured. Not that he did it intentionally. Cejudo's doing it intentionally. Or what Jon Jones did when he was in legal trouble. They're giving the division a little bit of time to catch up. and ultimately the welterweights caught up. The light heavyweights caught up, not the same. But now these bantamweights, they have a year or two to get on Cejudo's level because he's way out in front of them right now.
A lot of people are going to disagree with you there. I will as well. I really think that Piotr Jan, even Jose Aldo, Moraes, Sterling, Sandhagen, everybody's pretty well on that level. But once you go down the list, maybe talent isn't there as much. But again, you still have some big names coming up. I know Sean O'Malley this weekend, somebody that a lot of people are really excited for. There's a lot of different fighters in there. And again, a year or two, maybe you have this big catch up where your Sterling, Sandhagen's, Jan's, Aldo, but a lot of those, you know, young up-and-comers will have the chance to kind of vault themselves into the upper echelon of the division. So I will agree with that.
Go ahead. I'll say this. Petr Jan aside, I'll give him – I think he's the clear class of the division.
It doesn't matter because this weekend's fight between Sterling and Sandhagen is a title eliminator.
Him aside, I think that Cejudo runs through everybody else. I think he runs through Sandhagen. I think he runs through
he doesn't beat Sterling.
I think he already beat Moraes. I think he beat Aldo. So my point is, even if you disagree with me about where the division is talent-wise, you cannot disagree with me that division has no names. So they have some time to go establish themselves as you know, they have a chance to do what we're hoping Volkanovski does, right? Establish it, get a title, establish himself as a star, and make himself worthy of Cejudo's return. There you go. I saw the hot take sunglasses came out.
Yeah, first time, long time.
All right, let's talk about this division because we kind of talked about it a little bit anyway. Cejudo was stripped. That belt needed a new champion. Top of the bantamweight division is not chock full of names, like I just said. So to fill the vacancy in the championship column, the UFC chose Petr Jan and Jose Aldo. People are saying that this is not the best fight to make. But they said the same thing about Cejudo and Cruz. And as the fight was about to begin, everyone was locked in and excited for that Cejudo-Cruz fight. Is the Jan-Aldo fight one where we think we should cape for other fighters like Sterling and Sandhagen, but ultimately we'll get excited for this fight? Or do you think it's just a flop?
Well, I mean, that fight's better than the entire June 13th card. I mean, look at that. It's bad. It's a dud. And I'm somebody that gets so excited for the fights.
Can you stop throwing shade on the 13th? Can you do that for me?
It sucks. It sucks. All right. So Jan Aldo is better than all that. And I'm the first one that'll bellyache about a fighter getting a title shot off of two losses. What are we even doing here? I know 2020 is a crazy year, but Yoel Romero, Israel Adesanya was ridiculous. This is also ridiculous. Yes, I believe that Jose Aldo proves to be a great stylistic matchup against Piotr Jan. You got the heat in the hands of Jan. You got the movement and the combos of Jose Aldo. And again, that's an oversimplification. I know a lot of people in the comments this week calling me the casual and saying I've never watched fights. Everything's an oversimplification when they're five-minute videos. So if we look at that, and then we look at Sterling and Sandhagen, I'm more excited for that fight this weekend, the Sterling and Sandhagen, than I am for Jan and Aldo. Again, I've already stated my reasoning. It's the fact that you got a fighter on a two-fight losing streak that had a close split decision loss to Moraes, but Moraes deserves to be in this conversation more than Aldo. And I'm a little bit of a purist in those standpoints, but to me, man, I think Sterling is get it. I think he's your guy. And if he beats Corey Sandhagen this weekend, you got to ride that all the way to the top.
Yeah, it's going to be a hell of a fight. I mean, I've been wearing Corey Sandhagen pajamas forever. So I'm firmly in this guy's camp.
Next time I talk to him, I'll tell him you said that.
I appreciate that. And listen, for everything I've said about this division, I believe Aljamain Sterling is a stud. I believe he did earn himself a title shot. I just didn't think if he fought Cejudo, he would have won. So that's where we differ. But I definitely think these guys are right there. I think Petr Jan and Jose Aldo, a lot of what's going on with Jose Aldo, we've talked about this before. I will bring this term back again. This is a poster fight. This is a fight that looks good on a poster. It's going to look good when, Michael Buffer's doing the announcements. It's going to look good when Herb Dean's in between them. I just don't know how good it's going to look once the fight starts. That, you know, is still leaves a lot to be desired.
And hey, These artist series posters, keep them coming. Where's Boss Logic? Make it happen. All right, we'll move forward. John, seems like Kamaru Usman wants to fight everyone and at the same time, no one. Fights with Jorge Masvidal, Leon Edwards, Conor McGregor. They've all been discussed. And now the man of the hour is Gilbert Burns. John, what's the story with Usman? When will we see him fight next? And do you really think that Gilbert Burns is the guy right now? Do you strike while the iron's hot there?
You know, sometimes I think Tyron Woodley's a bad indicator of who the guy is, even though he's a former champion. He has such a weird style. And you know, honestly, to talk about Tyron Woodley just for a second, in his last fight, people that were for some reason expecting him to just come out and be different, I get it. I know that you want to see more urgency from Tyron Woodley. Guys, he put belts over his shoulder fighting like that. He doesn't have it like he used to, but that's who he is. And he's won, and that's like asking someone to, you know, a guy who's got a certain type of haircut to be like, hey, shave your head, and has, you know, gotten women his whole entire life. Say, hey, go shave your head and then go see if you can get laid. It's like, dude, this works for the guy. Why would he go so far away from what works? And I think that's kind of what you're asking Tyron Woodley. Now, as far as do I like what Gilbert Burns is bringing to the table? Yeah, because when I broke him down in watching the fight, there's a lot of things I saw that I liked. He wasn't tipping his strikes. He was making sure that he got out of there after he hit his strikes. He was showed good wrestling, showed good jiu-jitsu on the ground. I think Kamaru Usman's strengths go right into Gilbert Burns' strengths. I just think, you know, Tyron Woodley is guilty of this as well. Now Kamaru Usman is guilty of it. Once you get that belt, you're not as quick to get back in that ring as you used to be. You don't run to the octagon like you once did. Tyron Woodley was one of the busiest fighters ever until he got the belt. Then it's like, you know that shoulder surgery I've been waiting to get? Now it's time to get it. You know my knee's been bothering me. You know that commercial I've been wanting to shoot? It seems like there's always something to do once you get the belt, right? And I think Kamaru Usman doesn't want to be a guy that's like one and done, doesn't want to be a guy that has a short title reign. So he's trying to hold on to it, and I get that. But listen, you got to make a decision. Do you want to fight the guy that's most deserving? It's Gilbert Burns. Do you want to fight the guy that's going to make you the most money? It's Jorge Masvidal or Conor McGregor or calling out GSP. Like, dude, get it done. There's enough guys.
When I watch a fighter that's incredibly fluid, there's one song that enters my brain, and it's a song by a noted Canadian rapper that's really hit the scene in the last 10 years. I know Davidson Baker will love this little snippet of the song, but switching up the angles, now I'm in the roles with Illuminated Angel. It sounds really stupid, and it's a song called Star 67 by Drake. But Gilbert Burns was dripping in that fight. Man, he was all over the place, and he did look really good. Switching up the angles kept Tyron Woodley guessing, and that's the best way to beat him. But again, a lot of people, they threw shade at me because I picked Tyron Woodley to win last weekend. And listen, you put yourself out on the internet, and I do it, and you guys watching this or listening to this know that. I'm going to stand behind my pick. But if you watch Tyron Woodley and say, oh, he's a boring fighter, oh, he's a point fighter, oh, this and all that, did you watch his rise to win the title in the UFC? Because he was doing anything but being timid. The other thing was, if you jumped in, he would pounce on you. You saw that in the Darren Till fight while he was champion, but you saw it when he fought the Josh Koscheck. You saw it when he fought Carlos Condit. And then Robbie Lawler, he just absolutely unleashed to win the belt. But if you're really looking at this from a divisional standpoint, you're looking at your champion. This is a guy who's had knee issues and talked about it on Joe Rogan, the fact that he, walks upstairs backwards or vice versa, walks downstairs backwards because his knees hurt so bad. So, yeah, I'm glad he's taking care of his knees. I'm glad he's taking care of his health. If he wants to take a year off, go ahead. I really don't care. It's a wild division at this point. There's other fighters who have come back recently and found success. The Neil Magny's, who's fighting this weekend against Rocco Martin. Santiago Ponzinibbio, when's he coming back? I miss the old Gunnar Nelson. But still, there's a lot of names in there and some fresh faces as well. But in terms of Kamaru Usman, when will we see him next? Probably second half 2020. Who's he going to face? Hopefully Jorge Masvidal, but now with the wrench of this week or even today thrown into these plans, I don't know, but that's what I'd like to see.
All right, Craig, let's move on to sparring sessions. You know, I think it's time to talk about Dana White and all this pandemic business, all the Fight Island, all the you know, everything he's been trying to do since we really got deep into the COVID-19. So in retrospect, was Dana right about all this? As the chips begin to fall, you know, there's been some clips that came out on Twitter about Dana saying, like, last couple of months ago, I think it was, you know, why are these MMA media members trying to get all these fights shut down? It's going to be their jobs.
And you got to use the proper verbiage. Whoa, whoa. These wimpy and weak guys.
Okay. Right. And then today, you know, we saw some big name people leave The Athletic. John Morgan, who's as big as anybody in, not named Errol Hawani, in MMA media, he was on furlough for a minute. So when Dana said he was putting on these fights so that people could get paid and everybody act like he was just being stubborn and reckless and bullheaded, in the end, was he right?
I mean, yeah, he was right. Whether you disagree with certain payment models and the way that businesses go about providing content, I can only speak from personal experience during the pause. We ended up here on Fight Night Picks getting creative. I mean, we asked you, the fans, to send us your questions. So we get into it. You know, Curtis Blaydes, does he have a future as the longest reigning heavyweight champion? We talked about it. Cameron Romanek, who maybe Cameron's going to be doing some work with Fight Night Picks. So thank you, Cameron. But he was the one that asked that question. But there were a lot of people out there that were able to help the community with Fight Night Picks. And it was a lot of fun doing videos like that and doing FNP selects and doing. Like, we went through every single season of Dana White's Contender Series, talked about all the biggest stars, every single episode, who was in, who was out, this and that. We got really creative in the time that we had. But there's a reason why we did stuff like that, because we didn't have the fights and our channel didn't grow and our numbers went way down. A lot of people experienced that in this. Now, we're different because what do we have for overhead? I mean, it's not like we have these huge salaries. We're not making money. We're not out there, you know, paying a lot of people to work for us and this and that. So we don't have the same expenditures as some of the bigger organizations that need your views and need your subscriptions. So we were a little bit unique in the sense that we could continue on because it's not our full-time job. But for the people that lost their jobs, A, you never want to see that. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. You never want to see somebody lose their job. I mean, they have families, they have people that they need to provide for. So it's a shame to see what we had today. On the flip side, very talented people, and I hope nothing but the best for them and that they land on their feet. But going back to the original question, was Dana White right? From my personal experience, yeah. I mean, look at the you know, pythons on this guy. They're not very big. I'm as wimpy as and weak as they get in this space. I mean, you know that. Like, come on now. If people pick on me in the comments, you're not wrong. But to really lean into it, yeah, I mean, he was right in a sense. He just kind of tackled it in maybe the wrong way and used the wrong words. He wasn't very nice about it, but he was true. He was right.
I think the problem most people had with was the lack of transparency and the way that he talked about it in not giving us the details. Because you know what? In honesty, he probably didn't have the details. And he didn't know what was going to happen yet. He was figuring it out. He wanted to keep people on the string and interested, and he just couldn't figure out a way to do it without being a little bit covert, a little bit subversive in what he was saying. And I get that, you know, but in the end, we should have seen more clearly that, yes, Dana was not just being someone who – now, there is a part of us that said, well, just pay the guys. You know, it's not their fault there's a pandemic. Just pay the fighters and all that. But there's no way to tangibly do that. Like, should you pay a fighter? Should you continue to schedule events? And if those events get canceled, then you pay the fighters that would have fought. Do you pay everyone? Now you're paying fighters that weren't even scheduled to fight. There's no real way to do it that's going to make everybody happy. So I will say that I was against a lot of the things that Dana White was doing. And I do think in the end, he was trying to just keep the business of the UFC and MMA going.
Like, if you want to get mad in terms of sheer numbers, look at what Major League Baseball did. They cut the draft in more than half. So there's amateur players that aren't going to get paid like they normally would have. They're not going to get selected by teams. And it's been an idea that they get rid of a lot of minor league baseball. But then all of a sudden, teams are cutting hundreds of players. And it's something that's, you know, it's not going to trickle down into MMA because MMA is a very insular community. But still, it's something that, you know, nobody's really addressing with the commissioner of their league. And again, it's different. You have a players union, which maybe after what's going on today, the UFC or fighters will band together in MMA and they're going to come up with some sort of a union. But, you know, for the time being, what do you do if you're a fighter? Because this is another thing that's been pointed out. We've seen it before. So Conor McGregor fights Floyd Mayweather and gets $100 million. But how much of that $100 million after taxes does Conor McGregor really see? Because there's so many different people in the way that you have to pay. Now, minimize that a little bit. Think of a fight that happened recently. I'm pretty sure Rodrigo Nascimento and Dontayle Mays, when they fought a couple of weeks ago on the undercard of a fight night, one of them got paid like 10 and 10 and one got paid like 12 and 12. So your fighter that loses that fight, let's say you make 10 grand, how much of that 10 grand you really get after you pay your gym, your coaches, your corners, whoever? You're only going to see a percentage of that plus taxes after that. You only see a very small percentage of that. So fight fans and people out there really need to think about things in the bigger picture and the bigger scheme. And I know, again, this is a guy that will speak at a turn. He'll say some things that rub people the wrong way. But when it really comes down to it, if there's no fights, there's no revenue stream for a lot of people. And you're seeing a little bit more of that today too.
Yeah, I'm with you. So, it's a tricky business, you know. A lot of any time that you're in any type of business, I mean, listen, you're a guy that's in sales. You understand that the things that you sell determine the money you make, and Dana looks at it the same way. Well, how much money are you bringing in, and you get a percentage of that money. So if you're somebody that's on the prelims, you can't tell me that you should get paid more when no one's coming to see you. Now, if you put that argument with other parts of the sporting world, obviously no one's coming to see a middle reliever, but he still gets paid a percentage of the revenue based on how much he's needed for a team. There isn't the same type of need in mixed martial arts. I think it's a little bit different in that way. All right, what's next? We're going to do hit the speed bag. We're going to do this hate the player, hate the game.
Still hate the player, hate the game.
Let's do it.
I'm excited for this.
It's exciting. I'll let you start. Go ahead.
All right, so this is a new segment. And again, if this is the first time you're checking out Early Stoppage, we thank you. This is the third episode with Fight Night Picks. There was another iteration somewhere out on the internet. You can find it.
Pick the archives.
We touched on John Jones. The second one, we touched on the first 20 years in MMA, from 93 to 2013. So new segment to the show, hate the player, hate the game. Divisive person in the first question. Ali Abdelaziz. John, Ali Abdelaziz has a checkered past, maybe, possibly. There's been some things and some light that's been shed on this in the past week or so on social media. Yet he's probably the most successful manager in MMA. So do you hate the player or hate the game?
I'm going to hate the game on this one because, listen, Ali does what Ali's supposed to be doing. I've met Ali Abdelaziz a couple times. He's always nice to me. That doesn't mean that the things that he has done or is rumored to have done are not true. It doesn't mean that he has any business being an MMA manager, but he is an MMA manager. And as an MMA manager, there's two reasons why his fighters are very complimentary of him on social media. One, he may be controlling their social medias, but two, he makes a lot of money for these guys. He represents them well, and he makes sure that they are getting paid what they should be getting paid in the construct of that they're already all underpaid. He does well by his clients, so I'm going to go ahead and hate the game that allows him to do something like being the matchmaker for World Series of Fighting and also representing a lot of the fighters in World Series of Fighting, which he should have never been able to do. So
look at the PFL roster right now and try and figure out how many dominance fighters there are on there. And I'm going to spin this in another light. There's other really big MMA management companies out there. There are, that represent a whole bevy of different fighters, but they don't really have their own media days with multiple time champions. And you talk World Series of Fighting and PFL, pretty sure Natan Schult was one of the fighters there, Justin Gaethje, Kamaru Usman, Khabib Nurmagomedov. There's a lot of champions from a lot of different organizations raking in a lot of cash that this guy represents. And he figured his way into a matchmaking role, and he was a manager. So, you know, it's kind of a systematic thing. It's not a, it's, you might not like him, but he's A, making a lot of money for his fighters, and B, finding every loophole he can to make even more money. So do you dislike him? You might not like him at all, but he's found a way to win in this whole system.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, the thing that he's done well, I think, and we'll move on, but I think he's done well at creating dominance as a family, and those guys using each other to get better.
You want an idea of that? On a Sunday night, go on Twitter just before Submission Underground and see how many of his fighters tweet the same thing about it.
All right, Craig, Dana White is controlling salaries in MMA. We've already talked about John Jones and Henry Cejudo. I don't know that we did as good a job at speaking about Cejudo maybe leaving because of salary. So we might have missed that. But we're about to talk about Jorge Masvidal in a second. We've touched on him earlier a little bit. So Dana White and athlete pay. Craig, do you hate the player or do you hate the game?
Well, I can say this, I guess. There's other organizations that champion different models that have worked well for them. And if guys like Lorenz Larkin, Chael Sonnen, Ryan Bader, the list goes on. Sergio Pettis is really the biggest name. Have gone over to Bellator and found success and made more money. You could kind of hate the player because in terms of matchmaking, Dana White's really the guy. And in terms of contract negotiations, that's kind of a sticky situation. That's where you could really make it contentious, because is it your manager that's, it's his or her job to make you more money, or should the promotion pony up and pay you? Which came first, the chicken or the egg? See, I would say in this circumstance, you can hate the player a little bit because you could be a fighter that goes and fights for M1 Global and rakes it in, or goes to one championship and rakes it in, or KSW or wherever, PFL, and then you have a chance at $1 million at the end of the year. The model works for the UFC. They continue to attract big name talent because they've already built a brand and have a big name, and Dana White's a big reason why. But right now, in this instance, I say if you're a fighter, there's a lot of them hating the player less the game.
I'm going to say hate the game because I think that there is a lot to – Dana White's not running a charity. And I think that there is a lot of people who are making a lot more money than they bring in. If you were to build this as a model of, like, you will get paid a percentage. When people come in, they have to check the box as to who they're here to see. And also when they come in, we're going to start tracking who's buying shirts of what fighters, then I think that a lot of fighters will be very surprised as to how much they're not being viewed, or these fights are not being viewed because of them. So, listen, in the end, it is the responsibility of the employees to unionize and fight management. Management is always going to try and keep salaries as low as they can. When you have leverage, you have to move on it. That's how every other organization has gotten their salary structure to where it is. So,
all right, talking salary structure, I'm going to cut you off and I'm going to whip into the next one because this one directly affects Fight Night Picks. And though we don't have $100 million, I know it's rumored, but we don't have a deal in place yet. Joe Rogan has long touted the fact that his podcast is free to anyone who wants to listen to it, and he just signed a mega deal with Spotify. Fans are saying that Rogan sold out. So do you hate the player or do you hate the game? And if Fight Night Picks sells out, do you hate us? Or can you blame us?
I'm going to hate the player on this one because I don't know that Fight Night Picks has been as adamant as Joe Rogan has been about the structure in which he provides his podcast to fans. And then to say that for all these years and act like he's counterculture and he's making himself available and I'm on YouTube and allowing the Joe Rogan Experience clips to be put out there and redone, to do all that and then cash in with Spotify, I don't blame him for doing it. I blame him for selling one bill of goods all those years and then reversing course. So I don't know that if Fight Night Picks tomorrow had a $100 million deal with Spotify, you could pull up clips of you and I saying that the thing that makes our podcast so great is that it's free to everybody and it'll always be free, and that being who we are. We don't represent ourselves in that way, so it's not really that much of a departure from who we are. Plus, not for nothing, and I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it, the guy's already got money. So it's not like, you know, it's not like it was something that needed to be done necessarily. He had other streams of income.
I don't, so I'll take it. If it's on the table, I'll take it. $100 million, $1 million, it's all yours. Do I hate the player, hate the game? I don't really hate the player because, I mean, more money, more problems, but you take it anyway. And, I mean, just like the Drake song, Star 67, switching up the angles. Now I'm in the roles with Illuminated Angels. You got to switch up the angles and make money where you can. And not that there was stagnance with the show. I mean, that's the thing. The reason why Spotify picked him up, I would say, you get Edward Snowden on your podcast and you're already the biggest podcast out there. That just continues to add to how big the allure is around this thing. And if you can capitalize on that, why not? So maybe hate the game. I mean, I'm going to bring up something that, you really love and hold near and dear to your heart, but I'm pretty sure Spotify spent $1 billion on The Ringer. You hate The Ringer? No, you don't hate The Ringer. You still love The Ringer. And you love Joe Rogan. And so what if you have to switch over to Spotify? It's a minor inconvenience. You can still listen to the show. So hate the game. I mean, podcast companies, like, if you really want to hate the player, then you're really going to be a, you know, outspoken and upset at Caller Daddy on Barstool. Do you hate them, or do you hate the Wonderies and the HBOs of the world and everybody else that was looking to maybe try and pry them away from Barstool? Who do you hate in this circumstance? Probably the major networks that are doing it, less the content creators, even though Caller Daddy's a little bit of a different situation.
I respect that he got the deal. I think the smartest thing you can ever do is to get an industry zigging and then you zag, and you're the first one that zags. And you get everybody thinking this is the way to do it. And Rogan sort of set a model for the way that this should be done to the point where, like, you know, Brendan Schaub followed it. Andrew Scholes followed it. There's a lot of guys that are giving their content away to get more views and all that. But then right when everybody was zigging, Rogan zagged. So I'll give him that. All right,
Craig. Let's get into some free content. Yeah.
All right. Valerie Laredo caught some heat last week when Macy Chison and others, including the woman's goat, Amanda Nunes, were critical of the way she portrays herself on social media. So, Craig, and let me first say, tread lightly. We just got back. But Valerie Laredo, hate the player or hate the game?
Well, I kind of already, you know, the heart on the sleeve type conversation earlier on in the episode. So I already went with a heavy hitter to start. So this one's a little awkward, but you can't hate the player in the circumstance. Your window's short as an as an athlete. As it is, I mean, Valerie Laredo's had, what, one fight in Bellator? And think of the way that fight was marketed. Her opponent was from, you know, the middle of America, and she was a waitress at Hooters and got an opportunity to fight. Was she not going to take it? Yeah, she was going to take it. And it was actually a really impressive fight by her opponent, and less by Valerie Laredo. So what do you do in this circumstance? I mean, people were very, very critical of Beck Rawlings when she went on OnlyFans. So what? Who cares? This is an opportunity to make more money. It's a livelihood type of situation. You might not agree with it morally, but in terms of what Valerie Laredo is kind of, you know, the waters that she's treaded into, Bernie's word tread, the road's already been paved. Paige VanZant, Beck Rawlings, other fighters have gone through this avenue. And okay, let's flip it on its head. What's Luke Rockhold doing right now? Because I'm pretty sure he's a male model, if I'm not mistaken. So if the opportunity's there, take it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of the Rachel Ostoviches of the world. And here's the thing that is interesting. If you are an attractive fighter, every opportunity you get immediately becomes because you're an attractive fighter, right? Doesn't matter what Rachel Ostovich does. It's like, well, she shouldn't even be in the UFC if she wasn't pretty. You act like nobody with a okay records are in the UFC. The divisions are thin. So it's not like just because she's attractive. Yeah. Does it help her? Maybe. But I mean, it doesn't mean this is the only reason she's here. I think that I'm going to hate the game on this one, because this is what, when you can be Valerie Laredo or you can be Paige VanZant or you can be Rachel Ostovich and you are a more popular fighter than Amanda Nunes, then that is because of the game. It's not because of the players. They are maximizing the situation and saying that if I can't get to the top of the card, at least I have OnlyFans. At least I have my IG to sort of, like, you know, get sponsorships and stuff like that. So they are making the best of a bad situation. But I think so. I think the game is a little bit skewed, but it's skewed in their favor, so I can't get that mad. It's skewed for them, so I don't like the way the game is set up, but it does benefit them.
That's a different answer than I had. I appreciate your perspective, and I learned a little bit, and now I'm using my noggin. I'm putting on my thinking cap. So if we continue on, John, Dominic Cruz, he came out after his loss to Henry Cejudo and said that no nonsense, Keith Peterson may have been engaging in some tomfoolery and nonsense with the bantamweight goat, claiming that Peterson smelled like alcohol and cigarettes. John, let's talk Dominic Cruz. Do you hate the player or hate the game in this situation?
I hate the game that we have such a poor...
Stop.
Hold on. I hate the game in the sense that we have such a poor opinion of referees and judges that Cruz even gets away with trying this. But I hate the player because the alcohol is one thing. If Keith Peterson came in there smelling like cigarettes, who cares? But, it's not the best thing to smell like, but it's not certainly not doesn't impair his ability to be a referee. The alcohol is a different matter. I don't like that Dominic Cruz went to this so quickly. I disagreed with the stoppage. I don't think that if Keith Peterson were drunk, he would have stopped the fight early. That doesn't make sense to me. I hate the player on this one. And I'm a fan of Cruz. I'm not a fan of this.
I know a little bit about stopping early. I know a little about early stoppages, premature stoppages, what have you. But let me tell you this. You can't say that about a referee. I mean, MMA fans, listen, I'm talking directly to you, whether in audio or video format. You got to ease up on this. I understand that sometimes judges are bad. I get it. But it happens. It's a part of the sport. They're human. They're only human. Go watch baseball if you want to see bad judging. Go look at the umpires and what they call for balls and strikes. And that's every single day. And there's so many games in the run of a day. If that's all you're going to focus on and harp on, then you got another thing coming, pal. So in terms of this, Dominic Cruz, man, you're talking to Megan O'Leary. You caught poor Megan off guard. She had no idea that answer was coming out. Who cares if he smelled like cigarettes? That's true. What if he came out smelling like roses or durian? Nobody cares. Roses don't smell good, neither do durian. Now, in terms of the stoppage, I was cool with it. I thought, listen, there's no need for somebody to take undefended shots to the head like Cruz had, and he just kept wailing and wailing. So end it. This guy's already the GOAT at 135. I don't care if he wins or he loses in that circumstance. And for Cejudo, big whoop. He won bantamweight champ. He's one of the best of all time in general in MMA, but not at 125, not at 135. It's a unique set of circumstances. He beat two GOATs, but is he the GOAT? No, he's not. But yeah, hate the player in this instance, not the game.
You know, the interesting thing too is that Peterson, and listen, if this is a parody account, props to you, because you got me.
It was a parody
good.
Account.
Was it?
Yeah, it was a parody account, and you want a good Keith Peterson story? I got a great Keith Peterson story. Glad
but
you asked,
didn't
John
the guy
Franklin.
Start the account like a year and a half ago?
It's a parody account. Oh, best Keith Peterson man. Story you're going to hear from Craig Allen. First UFC event I ever went to, UFC Halifax, Brown and Derek Lewis, 2017. Controversial stoppage in the main event as Travis Brown took two unanswered shots right to the dome while he was already knocked out from Derek Lewis. Who hits as hard as a Mack truck. What happened? Everybody got mad at Mario Yamasaki. What did I do? Stayed in the arena for all the post-fight stuff. Then I left the arena. As I exit, there's not a lot of fans left. Two guys walking in front of me. One guy, Cutman. I can see the whole name on the back of his shirt. Who's next to him? Mario Yamasaki. Who's next to him? Keith Peterson. And what happened to them? If you're in downtown...
I thought there was two guys.
If you're in, there's more guys. It's Russian nesting doll of guys. If you're in downtown Halifax, this gets really confusing. There's two deltas across the street from each other. What happened? They got lost and they had no idea where they were going. So we had to help. The three of us, people were so mad at Mary Yamasaki for that stoppage. But they turned around and they were like, where are we? We have no idea where we are. Keith Peterson sounds exactly like he does on TV when he says, sir, are you ready? Are you ready? That's his regular speaking voice. And they had no idea where they were going. So we pointed them to the right delta and we saved the day for Mario Yamasaki and Keith Peterson. And that's my Keith Peterson story.
So just for the record, what did Keith Peterson smell like that night in Halifax, Canada?
Well, at the time, I was a fan. and I had a couple of brews, but they were really sketchy about giving away the beers there. So I had them early on in the night. I was pretty well stone cold sober by the time we got back. I can't remember what he smelled like.
That's fair. All right, Craig, Stipe Miocic seems to be in no rush to get back in the cage. He is a firefighter. We are in a global pandemic. But even with that factored in, there seems to be no timetable for return. Many have theorized that this is in response to Cormier making him wait for his rematch. So I ask you, Stipe Miocic, hate the player or hate the game?
Getting upset at arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time for doing a job in a pandemic, forcing a guy to fight when he has an incredibly important job to do in a crazy time in the world. You hate the game in this instance, John. And if your answer is that you hate the player, you're wrong, because you hate the game. This guy has such an important, A, he shouldn't have to be a firefighter, but he gets paid well, but he shouldn't have to be a firefighter. But he's such a leader in his community. And well, I don't know him personally, so I can't say that with full certainty. But this is one of the most important stars that you have. And you're making a bad example of him on social media. Shame on you. Shame on you. You hate the game.
I'm going to go with hate the game only because of the way that you prefaced my Lovely. Answer with Wonderful. You cannot hate the player. Listen, I get it. He's a firefighter. It's a pandemic. I'm not trying to take away from that. But to think that he isn't holding on to this belt a little, I think he's trying to wait Cormier out. I do. I think there's no timetable for return. I think he has no interest in doing it. I think that he is – he's needed where he's at, but he – I think there's some wiggle room there. I do. And, you know, I'm definitely hating the game, because the game is what led – here's why I hate the game and not the player. Because the game is what led Cormier to openly court Brock Lesnar, which started this whole thing. He should have just given Stipe the immediate rematch right away, and then he didn't, and that's what led to all this, you know, acrimony between...
And everybody looking into how weird Brock Lesnar's teeth are. Like, right. there was a lot of repercussions from that.
Yeah, I mean, he shouldn't have to deal with that, Brock Lesnar. Go ahead.
All right, so last one on the docket, Jorge Masvidal. John, Jorge came out today and said, if you won't pay me my worth, release me. He has a contract that he signed that dictates his pay. So do you live up to the contract there? Do you hate the player, or do you hate the game in the circumstance?
Well, let's talk about contracts. And I think it was Chael Sonnen, who we are now very much into this podcast before my first Chael Sonnen mention. So I'm clearly the counseling's doing well. But my question, one thing Chael said a long time ago was, everybody wants to change their contract when they overperform it. No one wants to change their contract when they underperform it. So where was Jorge Masvidal giving back money when no one knew his name, and he wasn't popular, and he wasn't winning, and he was a journeyman? Where was the him saying, I'm not getting paid. I'm getting paid more than I deserve here. Now, granted, fighters are underpaid. We get that. And I have myself said that the only way to make change is to ride out your contracts and be willing to take stances that dictate, when you have leverage, that your circumstances will change. So he's doing what he should be doing. So I'm going to hate the game officially on this one, but I did want to get in the fact that people are very much signing contracts and only looking to renegotiate them based on success.
There's definitely shades of gray here. That's why it gets kind of weird. Normally I see it in one way or another way, what have you. This is one of those rare instances where I can see, you know, the different perspectives, and it's a shame the question's worded this way. You have to pick one or the other. But I will say the game in this instance, just because if it was just one fighter, and it's always just one fighter, like you said, you're overperforming. I want more money. I'm Conor McGregor. I've got two belts. Give me more money. I want stake in the company, whatever. But if you're somebody like BJ Penn, you think BJ Penn was asking for more money when he was on his seventh loss? No, he wasn't. He was happy and content to be in the promotion, actually getting a paycheck. You got to hate the game, though, because when your biggest stars are this vocal about pay and the fact that they're getting underpaid, you have to make a difference. Again, will there be a union? I don't know. Will they band together? I don't know. The UFC definitely doesn't want that, especially right now when they're scraping the bottom of the barrel for their June 13th card. But you got to hate the game. And that card sucks.
You know, you're right. And listen, the only thing that's going to change this, I've said this before, but this is the only thing that's ever going to change it. You wait for the biggest card of the year and you walk out. That's it. And then that's the way that you do it. You say, listen, we're not fighting tomorrow night. After you guys all make weight.
But then you have to have everybody in agreement.
You do. And it's going to take somebody with some clout. You know, recently The Athletic did a piece before they started shredding all their employee roster about where they asked a bunch of fighters anonymously about this, that, and the other. And they said, who should be the person that should lead the labor thing? And they all chose the majority of people chose Conor McGregor. Now, the reason why they chose Conor McGregor is very clear. Conor is a huge fighter with a lot of leverage and a lot of money. If Conor wanted to bankroll an entire card, he could do it.
That's why he's a bad choice, because he has so much money that he doesn't need it. So what does he care, really, at this point?
Well, but that's the kind of guy that has to do it, because he has that kind of clout. And
you have to get somebody that's a mouthpiece, Conor McGregor. You have to get somebody that's still hungry, not Conor McGregor legacy, but not money-wise. And you have to get somebody that's can band everybody together. Conor McGregor? Yeah. So there were a lot of different names out there. Daniel Cormier. I mean, yeah, he's kind of at the end of his road. So in terms of fight purses, maybe the money, you never know. But he's a guy that has the deal with ESPN, which would put everything in jeopardy. It probably would for him. I mean, that's an uncomfortable position you have to put yourself into. Look at Cajun Johnson, no longer with the UFC, was part of Project Spearhead, and Leslie Smith, Bellator. So it's kind of difficult.
This was not done intentionally by the UFC, I'm certain, to suppress a union. But if you think about it, the best candidates to lead a union all work for ESPN. Cormier, Bisping, Cruz, Chael, Melendez. But you know what I'm saying? Like, these guys, these are guys. Like, if you took those guys. Okay, hear me out. If you took those guys.
I'm just thinking. Like, Melendez, they misspelled his name on a shirt. So,
yeah. But here's my deal. If you took those guys and created a union, you would have a lot of fighters covered in terms of their connections, right? So you'd have, you know, you'd have Chael has his contingent. Cormier has, like, Cormier, with Cormier, you get Khabib, you get, you know.
Bisping, you get Cyborg.
Bisping, you get the European fighters. Melendez, you get the Diaz brothers. Cruz, you get some guys. So, I mean, they're missing, like, one or two guys to get, like, real all the heavy hitters. But, you know, maybe if you add Dean Thomas to it, you get more guys. Maybe if you add Matt Serra to it, you get, you know, there's some guys you could add. But my point is that's fortunate for the UFC that all those guys have chosen broadcasting careers and they're kind of on the payroll. All right, Craig, time to tip our caps to MMA Reddit. We'll start the conversation. There's been a little bit of confusion based on the intro and some discussion you and I have had. What the start the conversation is going to be about, I'll put that confusion to an end here. I really want to talk to you about fighter contracts. We've already been kind of talking about this. Let's get more into it. John Jones is talking about if he were a light heavyweight fighter, if he were a heavyweight fighter, how he should be compensated. To start the conversation is on a simple question. Do you think fighters should have different contracts when they fight at different weights?
Okay. Let's take that for what it's worth. So Demetrius Johnson famously traded for Ben Askren because he wasn't a big enough draw, but he was a pound-for-pound goat at flyweight. Whereas Stipe Miocic, you're the baddest man on the planet, and you probably do get paid quite a bit more than Demetrius Johnson. I'd have to look at the numbers. But you would think that your heavyweight would get paid more. And then everything might scale up. But then you throw wrinkles into that. Jose Aldo's at 135, and he's a consensus goat at featherweight. And he was great in WEC, and he was great in the UFC. So should he get paid more as a bantamweight than, I don't know, a former champion, a name on the tip of the tongue, Tyron Woodley at 170 when he's losing? That's where it gets really interesting. I don't think that you should necessarily scale it up. I mean, think of it this way, too. Should Zara Fearn or Norma Dumont at 145 pounds in the UFC get paid more money than Joanna Jane Jacek, Rose Namajunas, Zhang Wei Li at 115 pounds? No, not at all. You pay your stars more money. They put more butts in the seats. And, you know, this time of year, I said this on national radio, and I know it didn't sound good. I said put butts in seats, but really it's more putting butts in couches. And there was no laugh or anything on the other end, so it got really awkward. But right now, you're just trying to get people to sit in their couch and watch this fight. So there's nobody in attendance. You get it. You're smiling. For the people listening on audio, this is awkward, but you get what I'm trying to say. Your big stars make the money. You pay them. You don't scale it up based on weight.
Well, I'm not talking about scaling it up based on weight. Like, I'm not doing it like they're like a pound of ground beef or like, you know, chicken breasts. What I mean is that, like, do you have more value in a different weight class? Does Jon Jones have more value as a heavyweight because of who's in the heavyweight division? Like, if
it's a weaker division.
Yeah. Well, no. I'm using that as an example. No, that's what I'm saying. Okay. So, let me use your point against you. Because heavyweight's a weaker division, does Jones at heavyweight matter more? Because the division's weaker. Does Khabib Nurmagomedov matter more at 170 than 55?
No. Let's not get it twisted. What sells a fight? Okay, think about some of the worst title fights you've ever seen. And then you ask yourself, is the juice worth the squeeze? I'll go with one that's this weekend. Amanda Nunes, Felicia Spencer. Amanda Nunes is a minus 600 favorite. Is she going to win? Probably. A lot of people in the YouTube comments saying that I'm an idiot because Amanda Nunes gasses. Well, the last time I checked, she won 10 fights in a row and beat every current former champion two different weight classes. So you're an absolute donkey. And don't say that in the comment section, but I'll leave it up there. So if we're going to have conversations like that, look at some of the worst. Was that highly personal? Yeah, it was. But think of some of the worst title fights you've ever seen. Holly Holm, Jermaine Durandamy. It was a pay-per-view that didn't draw a lot. Like, what's another one? Like, there's been some divisions where they just kind of, here's a fighter. Make them fight for a title. What are some bad ones that you can think of?
No, I mean,
Eddie, like, Wineland, Henin Burrell. You think a lot of people are getting excited for that at UFC 165? No, they're getting excited for Jones and Gustafson. Like,
I'm being misrepresented here. What I mean is that it's okay. Does a guy like, how, my point is, how horrible is the featherweight division without Demetrius Johnson for all those years? Featherweight, what am I talking about? Flyweight. featherweight division did just fine without Demetrius Johnson. The flyweight division, until Cejudo came along, there wasn't a lot going on there. So Demetrius Johnson held that division together and made it relevant. So my point is that worth more? All the years that we say Anderson Silva was fighting bums until he got Chael Sonnen, okay, fine. He was fighting bums. So then how much value does he have to the 185-pound division if everybody else is a bum? If he was out of there, your 185-pound division has no stars. If he'd went to 205, he would have got bigger fights, but the 85 division would have crumbled. So that's my point.
Okay. Let's take your point and counter it. Demetrius Johnson left. What's going on at flyweight? Well, it seemed like there was a purge, and now it's in a renaissance period. So...
But they had a star to bridge the gap. So there's Cejudo. Cejudo was the star.
No, Brandon Moreno was the star.
So now that Cejudo's gone, though, that makes it interesting, right, at 25?
Yeah, exactly. Like, wow.
Who's going to carry the division at 25?
He hasn't been there since January 2019 when he fought TJ Dillashaw. Again, I'm just a casual, though. I don't know these things.
But there's no one, and no one's headlining the division.
What do you mean? Joe B and Deiveson Figueiredo just fought and then they're going to fight again.
Right, but are they able to carry that division? Do they have the power to carry that division? People cared about the flyweight division when Demetrius Johnson was the champion.
It's a shame that you asked me this question. Personally, I think it's doing just fine. I'm incredibly excited about it for casual. I'm incredibly excited about it. But it's a shame that they book fights like they are this weekend where they have GCA Formiga and Alex Perez, top contenders. And then after that, you have Alonzo Menifield and Devin Clark. Which fight means more for the division? Your number two guy fighting your number nine guy or two unranked guys? Or maybe Devin Clark's ranked, but it's low in the division. So it all depends. I know the UFC values the flyweights less than the other divisions. I get it. And you got a knockout artist in Menifield fighting a good fighter, I guess, in Devin Clark. And he's 10-4 and he doesn't have a great UFC record. But yeah.
So your takeaway, just to be clear, your takeaway from this is,
or I'm biased.
Or your walk away from this, I should say, is that you don't think that your value is to the company, not to your division. Doesn't matter how bad or great your division is. You should not be able to say, it's kind of like a job where you were hired for this job, and the guy says, not only do I want you to go out and sell, Craig, now you're a trainer. You're like, wait a second, I got hired to sell. Now I'm training? You know what I'm saying? My point is that they're trying to – if they get you for more than one division, yes, they're paying you for each fight, but they're asking more of you. Here they come.
Is it the sword that I'm ultimately going to fall on? No. It's not the argument that I'm going to define my career by. But, yeah, I'm going to stay on my hill here and you know, stick with my point.
That's fair. All right, guys. There you have it. The third episode on Fight Night Fix for Early Stoppage is in the books, 22 overall to keep track. Be sure and comment under this video. Let us know what you'd like to see from us next on YouTube. Also, give us a look on iTunes and Spotify. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FMP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Let's get into it.